Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is a Los Angeles-based dating coach, fitness pro, and writer, whose career started writing ad copy for Pepsi, Pizza Hut, Gillette, and Visa, and then went on to screenwriting, TV programming, digital entertainment, before settling in the always interesting world of coaching. Please welcome Trevor Brandon Schaff.
Hi, nice to meet you.
It's great to chat to you. I've been so looking forward to this. I was telling you off air, I suspect we have a lot in common in terms of encouraging people to pursue the dating world in a way that's kind of more comfortable and productive for them, but also not going down this route of you're single, how do we fix it?
Right. It's not anything that needs to be fixed. Just because you're single doesn't mean you're broken.
Absolutely. And for you then, could we start off with some of your experiences around singledom and unpacking some of these pressures?
Well, as you know, I got married for the first time at 51. Up until that point, I like to think I dated half the planet. I feel like I've dated half the planet. Definitely I am an international food court of daters, equal opportunity. So yes, yeah, so I experienced a lot. And I felt that I needed to. Mm-hmm. And that was I didn't necessarily like being a late bloomer, but I guess that was the plan. And that was just how I was wired to be, to take it slow and to discover and experiment and live my life and meet people and get a sense of what I wanted. It just took a little longer than I thought, but that's okay, as it turned out. I did meet the one. And in the meantime, yes, I kissed a lot of frogs. and some of them I didn't kiss. Some of them I didn't even shake their hands. There were a lot of, you know, as I like to say, one and done.
Yeah. Now, I have a whole theory about this that I like. Sometimes I become a caricature of myself, both on the show and also in my real life. And one of the things I will find myself going on about is when friends are having a lot of drama with somebody over a relationship that isn't even a relationship yet. I kind of have this saying of like, sometimes it's too much for someone you haven't even seen naked. Like, I think there can be a limit on how much drama you can accept from someone that isn't really even in your life in a relationship-y way at all.
Oh, no. I mean, yes. Good point. Very smart. That was a very astute observation. Yes. If it's too much drama to begin with, if there are too many complications in the beginning, this does not bode well, because it will probably only get worse. And although I do leave hope, I do hold out hope that, and I did for myself, that people change and that people come around when they do. Mm-hmm. They may not be, you know, may not be immediate, may not be love at first sight, but, you know, and sometimes it's better that way, that things develop slower and it gives it time to sort of deepen. But yes, I think people are in a hurry. There were times when I was in a hurry and I noticed that that was not good. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in a hurry, when it is urgent, then you run the risk of being desperate. And when you are desperate and you are dating, that leads to all kinds of problems and bad, bad choices.
Yeah, well, bad choices. And then also, I think it leaves you open to a lot of the wrong people being interested in you as well.
When you're in a hurry and when you're desperate, you not only make bad choices, but people pick up on that. They smell it, they sense it, and they know that you're, you know, an easy mark, mm-hmm. or you're easy prey or someone to be manipulated. And that's not good. So it's super important that everybody listening takes a deep breath. Take a deep breath, everybody, and just relax. You will be fine. You will meet your person, or you may not meet your person. But the key is for you to be comfortable with who you are, with where you are in life, and be good with that. Mm-hmm. And yes, do the work. And yes, make the effort. But then you got to release. You have to surrender a lot of stuff and let what's going to come in.
Yeah,
which is a little, that's a very Zen way of looking at dating. But I have to tell you, there is a lot of Zen sort of Buddhist kind of release, you know, surrender, detach from the outcome type stuff that really does work in dating.
Yeah. And I imagine, you know, when you look back now and you found the one, you can see how all these experiences, varied as they were, kind of led you up to where you are now and maybe being ready for the relationship you ended up in.
Absolutely. They, you know, I like to think of the all the dates and the boyfriends and the relationships not as necessarily failures or non-starters, but lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And they all somehow, all of them, probably unwittingly, pushed me, moved me forward, moved me, advanced my life to a point where, yes, I was ready and healthy and smarter and wiser and older and able to see something that was good and healthy for me.
Yeah, no, because I do think about that all the time. We often talk about on the show like that a lot of this we just can't rush. And I think part of that is if we're not in the right place to receive like a healthy and grown-up relationship, then we won't even kind of see that as the right person for us at the time, right? If we're not in the right headspace for it, we'll find an excuse not to accept it.
Yes. So, you know, people always say, you got to love yourself first. And, you know, that's hard for some people. The concept of loving yourself and being okay with yourself and being, you know, comfortable in your own skin is no easy task. It may take a few years, but, and it did for me, you know, it took me quite a while. And I didn't know who I was for a really long time. I didn't know what I wanted. Hence all the journey.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, the journey worked out for me. It I guess it was part of the bigger plan. And it's, I think people, if you're not married by a certain age, there's a stigma. If you're single, there's a stigma. What's wrong with me? I'm defective. I'm broken. No, you're not. You are just finding yourself. And by the way, if you do feel that there are things that are wrong, perhaps that need fixing, yeah, do it. You know, get the help that you need. Do what you need to get yourself in a good place that you feel comfortable and secure and proud of yourself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm a big believer in that. And for you, when you kind of look back, you can see that you weren't maybe ready or you had things to kind of work on and figure out. What was it like kind of going through the early years of your dating? And at that point, you say now you didn't know what you were looking for. Did you feel like you knew?
I knew what I liked, and I liked me, so I just wasn't ready to settle down. That was it. Pure and simple. Not ready to settle. I had exploring to do, and to have gotten married 1 minute before I did would have probably not lasted. And I had didn't have opportunities. I had tons.
People tried to pin you down.
Yes, you know, I met nice guys. I dated really good guys, and probably any number of them would have married me. We never even got that far. I was, as I say in the book, I was a runaway girlfriend.
And how literal was that? Were you always the breaker upper?
I was always the breaker upper. I was the dumper.
And was it at a certain level of seriousness? What was the pattern?
Sure. I like to think I was commitment non-phobic, but I was commitment phobic. I guess I was. So yeah, there must have been something in me that just wasn't, you know, I wasn't ready to say I do. And I had to get used to that. But then I got to an age where I was ready to say I do, and that nobody was there to ask me. So I had a very bad timing in my 40s. Not a good time for me, because then I was ready. And then the guys weren't. So that was, oh man.
And were they generally similar kind of age at that point?
Yes, but a lot of them were just getting divorced.
Right.
So, you know, the older you get, the older your dating pool gets. And so for me, I was dating a bunch of separated guys and divorced guys who were not in a hurry to jump back in with me, who had never been married. And oh, and by the way, wanted kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also sort of a, I don't want to use this word, but boner killer.
Yeah, where you're looking to have fun and they're wondering about fertility. Yeah.
That was the first word that just came to my mind. But, you know, it was a deterrent. If you're dating people that do not share your vision of the future, you are not, this is not good. So that is one of the things that I really, when talking about what makes you compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so maybe we're jumping ahead here, but so in my case, because in my 40s, when I felt that I was ready to settle down, I had all kinds of compatibility. I had chemistry, you know, there was attraction, there was desire. It was great, except that me and the fellow did not have a shared vision of the future, which was a kibosh. It was an ender, relationship ender, boner killer.
And was that a big factor in it then around kids? Was that something you knew you didn't want? Or was it that you weren't?
No, I want, okay, so late. I'm late to everything, okay? And late to having kids. So I, at a certain point, realized, oh my God, I forgot to get married and have kids. Like around 42, I freaked out. And so I thought, well, shit, I can't find anyone to marry me and make kids with me. So I'm going to do it myself. So I set out to have a baby on my own. And I went through the whole thing with donor sperm and IVF and that whole, you know, drill. And I did it. Wasn't successful, but I did it because I had to if I wanted kids. Time was ticking. Clock was ticking. And that's in the book, that whole period of my life. Very interesting, by the way. I'm glad that I did it.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating kind of area of people's lives and indeed of science. Like, it's come forward so much. And yet, like, there is no guarantee of it working. You know, the cost of it, the length of the process, unfortunately, doesn't correlate with success.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I tried. And I felt bad that it didn't work. I was very sad, you know. You can only imagine the level of, like, self-berating and self, you know.
Blaming,
yes. You know, why didn't I do this sooner? Why didn't I wait so long? And, well, I couldn't because, like I said, it didn't occur to me until that very moment at 42 years old. I didn't think to freeze my eggs. I didn't think to do that. I lost track of time. I don't know. Anyway, so yes, it was a hardship, but I'm glad I did it. I feel like I can be more accepting with the outcome because I tried,
mm-hmm.
because I went there. If I hadn't tried at all, I think I would have felt worse. You know, what can you do? You give it your all, right? And then above and beyond that, if you do your best and it still doesn't work, at that point you have to let go and you have to make peace.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I would imagine, you know, you weren't for lack of progress in your life generally. So as much as you were out there dating on and off and, you know, kind of had that on your mind, you also were making progress in your career and like changing career several times. And so there was always, you know, that. And I'm sure that was very kind of encouraged as you found new successes.
You know, it's so important to keep a full and active life with things that make you proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
To do things that make you feel like a winner in other areas of your life, that will take the edge off the disappointments. And that is what I learned as a single person, that it was important to fill the voids, you know, and stay busy and active so that I could take my mind off of what wasn't there and what wasn't happening. And I also am an only child, so I had a little more experience at being on my own and being by myself, which I did not mind, which people have a hard time with, by the way. Very hard time.
Yeah.
Being alone with yourself. Being alone with yourself is some serious training. You know, that is some resilience building right there. That's character building. If you can be on your own, by yourself, and fine, that bodes very well for you.
No, I agree. And it's then interesting because if you do get used to that, then other people often don't believe you anyway. That's some of the single shame, that they're like, no, but you must. Like, surely everything will be better if you found someone. And it's not as simple as that.
I can tell you that, you know, I've spent way more many years alone and single than I have as a married woman. So I've only been married for 9 years. I'm still getting used to it. It is still new. It is still crazy and weird and eye-opening and mind-blowing. It really is. Because I'm, you know, not used to... I mean, I never even lived with a guy. I've had roommates, but I didn't cohabitate with a guy. So sometimes I'll just be sitting here and hearing my husband walking around or going to the bathroom, and I'll just sort of marvel at it. Like, what is this creature in my home? Who is this person? What is this guy peeing in my bathroom?
This overgrown pack.
I'm not going to lie. I love being married. I love being in a partnership. I love it. It's fabulous. It's fantastic. With that said, I was a fabulous, fantastic single person.
And I want to hear more about that. But first, you have a dating story to share from your personal archive.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I have so many. I could fill 3 more books with dating stories. From the People Are Weird file, okay? I don't know if this is so much just a dating story, a dating disaster, as it is just people are strange. And they get weird when they date. I don't know what it is. Something, I don't know. There's a switch.
It's like a glitch in the matrix.
Just because you're on a date doesn't mean you have to. What is this with the weird behavior or the tics or the things or it just does. Anyway, so I have a date with a very well-known producer, Hollywood producer. This is in the late 90s. Okay. And this guy is well-known, and he's successful, and he probably makes a lot of money, okay? And I know this, and by the way, I'm from here, and that does nothing for me. So money never did anything for me. I don't care. I don't give a shit how much money you make. In fact, the more money you make, usually the shittier the person you are. Which, by the way, this story proves.
Yeah, well, money does not build character. It can do a lot of things, but... Yeah.
No, in fact, it makes you weird. Okay, so I go on this date with this guy who is, you know, sort of a big deal here in town. Mm-hmm. We go, he takes me to see Nelly Furtado, okay, whom I didn't at the time, she was new. I didn't really know her, but okay, I'm down, you know, I like new music. And okay, so we go, there's a bar at this theater, and we order a couple drinks, and I excuse myself to the ladies' room. I come back, and the drinks are on the bar, and we're drinking, and it's showtime. And he says, "Hey, listen, would you mind paying for the drinks because I forgot my wallet?" And I thought, "Oh, okay. I mean, that's just odd, but sometimes people forget their wallet. Okay, fine." Cut to, we have another date, okay? The following week, this one is an afternoon date. We go to the beach, have a lovely day at the beach. We go to a restaurant near the beach, Mexican restaurant called Merrick's Tex-Mex, I'll never forget. And same sort of situation. We go after a lovely day at the beach. We go into the bar area and we're having margaritas. And that was it. We're just having drinks. This was our second date. There was no, we didn't kiss. There was nothing that, you know, I'm still getting to know this guy. He doesn't know me. I don't know him. And it's time to pay the bill and go home. And he said, "You know, would you mind, I forgot my wallet. Would you mind paying for the drinks?" And I said, "Are you kidding me? Second time you have forgotten your wallet?" And in my mind, I'm thinking, you are too rich, too successful, too smart to be this dumb or to be this weird. Why? Anyway, so I said, "Well, okay, I'll go get my wallet." He goes, "Oh, no, it's okay." Because he had gone to the bathroom sometime earlier. He says, "It's okay. I went to the car and I went into your bag and I got your wallet for you."
Wow. So he's real organized with other people's money.
So I thought, you are officially a weirdo and get me out of here. And so... yeah, so he handed me my wallet. I paid for the second time. He had the nerve to go into my bag. And so at that point, he took me home. I wrote him an email. I said 2 things. Number 1, lose my number. And number 2, pay me back for the 4 sets of drinks, cocktails that I bought. You are weird. I never want to speak to you again. And I didn't. And a week later, he did send me a check for $150.
Well, I mean, that part is maybe the most surprising of all, that he actually gave you the money back.
He did. Because, okay, so finally, you know, he did the right thing. But that was one of the weirder dating stories. And then there were others that are in the book that are probably more graphic and funny, and you know, which you'll have to buy the book. But you know, so people tend to be strange, and they test you. They test, like, that guy tested me. What are you testing me for? To see how I'm going to react? Is this like amusing for you? That really pissed me off.
Yeah, no, sometimes I think it is that. It's what they can get away with. I also think there's a lot of debate, obviously, around like how money should be approached in dating, right? Of like who pays and kind of how that conversation goes. Should it be a conversation that's had at all? And I think maybe my only kind of out and out rule against it is like, when it becomes an uncomfortable power dynamic like that, when like one person has made the decision for both of you, that's often the thing that can be the most jarring.
Oh, it was so inappropriate, and it was so telling, and it was so unattractive.
Yeah.
But here's what I have to say about the whole, and you know, I have a lot to say about feminism versus the modern dating culture, because women can pay for themselves. And women can pay their own way. Women do. I read some statistic that women now, single women, outpaced men in terms of buying their own homes. So yes, we've achieved a level of equality, which is fantastic. But that doesn't necessarily translate to romance and dating and what our roles are. What are our roles? Should we forget, you know, progress when dating, when courting? Do we let women pay? Do men not, you know, do what they have been over millennia told, what, you know,
expected?
Right. So here's what I think. If you're asked out, the person who asks you out should pay.
Yeah.
Okay. I really do. I just think that. And I think there should be a moment. And if you find that at the end of the day that you're not interested, then absolutely offer to pay for yourself. Just do that. Because then there are no expectations. There's going to be no, you know, quid pro quo where, you know, well, I paid, so then that means, you know, no, that there's no obligation there. And I don't think it's a bad idea just to say, even if the guy or someone asks you out, just to say, hey, you know, can I, may I split this with you? It's a nice thing to say, I think, now, because it doesn't assume anything.
Yeah. No, I think that's very fair and balanced. I'd agree that, yeah, the only correct assumption might be that if you ask the person out, you assume that you're paying and you'd be ready to do so. Like, ideally, everyone involved is kind of ready to do so, right?
Yes, but I'm old school. I'm very old-fashioned. Well, because I'm old.
You're not.
I am. So yeah. So, like, I really love old-fashioned romance. I love courtship. I love people asking people out on proper dates, okay? I think it's wonderful that people open doors and, you know, do nice chivalrous things. I love that. And I have this terrible fear that we're losing that in this dating culture. Also because of online dating. I mean, it's really sucked the romance out of love.
Sucked the soul out of so many single people. I see what you're saying. I think definitely there's still very much something for what comes down to like making an effort. You know, plan a nice date, choose a nice place, be polite, be courteous to the person. I don't necessarily think that has to involve opening doors, but show that you're interested. Like, if nothing else, if you don't have another strategy for how to like show that you're interested and caring and protective towards somebody, then sure, open all the doors.
Yes. I read an article that was written by a young woman who was so outraged about coffee dates. She thinks they're just demeaning and lack of effort and lazy. Okay. No, you're not entitled to a beautiful 5-course dinner on your first date, lady. All right. You're just not. You don't know that person. He doesn't know you. You're not entitled to that. You know, that's like, I don't understand that. I don't understand. It's a first date. Just go get a beer or a cup of coffee or come on. You know, you don't have to. These expectations are insane to me. As you go forward, as you date, yes, as you were saying, effort is beautiful. Planning is beautiful. It shows interest. It shows that you care. That's very attractive. You know, I remember my first date with my husband, and I talk about this in the book. by the time I met him, I was so jaded. I was so hardened. I was so cynical. I just thought, nothing's going to ever work. I'm going to be single forever. Why even bother? Let's just, you know, okay, you want to take me to dinner? I kind of knew him a little bit, so it wasn't a total blind first date. So in my mind, I thought, we'll go someplace local, like within walking distance, just in case things go south, because they usually do, that I'll be able to walk myself home. That's how I was thinking. That was my thing. So he comes to pick me up and he tells me the evening he has planned. We're going to go here and then we're going to sit here and then we're going to get gelato here. And I thought, wow, you are really putting some effort into this, but I don't trust this. So we're going to go my plan because I still don't trust that this is going to work out. So we ended up doing what I wanted to do and I made him forget the plans and we went down the street to my usual joint where I take all my first dates. There's an Italian place. This is not in the book.
Oh.
There's an Italian restaurant a couple blocks away that is fast. It's easy. It's good. I can get out of there unscathed if I don't, you know, goodbye. And so I take all my dates there, right? So I take Robbie there because, you know, this is never going to work, of course, in my mind, because I'm jaded, right? It's just never going to work. So we get there. We actually have a really nice date. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, I kind of like this guy. So the maitre d', or the owner of the restaurant, on the way out, I had this feeling that I wanted to date this guy again, right? You know, Robbie. So I said to the owner of the restaurant, I whispered to him, I said, listen, I just want you to know I'm not a hooker. I bring all my dates here. I know I bring all these guys here, but I just want you to know I'm not a prostitute. And he gave me a look like, you know, it's okay. Yeah, wink, wink. It's okay.
He was like, as long as he's paying the bill.
I mean, I can only imagine, oh, here she is again with another guy, with another date. Anyway, it was one of the funnier moments. I guess you had to be there. In fact, we were just there the other night because he's closing the restaurant after 35 years. And I pointed to husband and I pointed to my ring and I said, I did it. I did it. No more dates at your restaurant.
And tell me, given we touched on dating apps there, you have some thoughts on how to kind of set boundaries and not get burnt out with them.
Oh, apps, you yep. ask? Oh, well, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with them. I love them, but I despise them. I love them because, come on, it's great. They're, you know, a million people at your fingertips. They're all there to do the same thing, right? So there's no guesswork involved. You know you're there to date. So it's not like you're going to a party and you don't know who's single or not. Everyone there is single, or they say they're single. So that's great about it. It's easy. It's convenient. You all have sort of the same, you know, motivation. I hate it because people are rude and terribly behaved and selfish and, you know, don't even get me started. I think there's something about being anonymous that breeds really bad behavior in people. Hiding behind a screen is awful. There's no accountability. There are no consequences. You can be a total asshole and no one will ever know you. And then what do you do with that? You know, this is the problem I have. It pisses a lot of people off. It makes people mad. It hurts people's feelings. And they take that hurt and that anger and that outrage and that pain, and they bring it along with them to the next person. And then, you know, it's sort of this kind of, I hate to say the word virus, but, you know, it's like it's contagious, mm-hmm. you know, and then it spreads. So, yes, there are ways to hopefully keep yourself somewhat disconnected, at least from the bad parts about it, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, boundaries. Okay, so...
Well, I just want to pause on that, actually, because I've never heard it articulated in that way of like a kind of contagion of like bad behavior and disgruntledness. But I think you're really onto something there with the apps. And it was even something I was thinking about as you described that date of, was that guy employing a strategy to get you to pay because he felt disgruntled by going on loads of dates that went badly and then paying And rather than examine his own behaviour or his own part in those dates, he was like, oh, these women are ripping me off. I'm going to turn it on them and they're going to pay for my meal.
Yeah, and maybe that's what he was doing. You know, it was a power play. He was testing me. He's trying to see if, you know, was I interested in him for his money or no? Maybe he had been taken advantage of and maybe he had been burned and maybe he projected all that anger and that resentment onto me. And that's what people do. They turn around, they're mistreated online, and then they turn around and then, you know, they mistreat other people or their skin gets thinner or they get more sensitive. And it's really important that people keep their wits about them, that they understand it for what it is. It's not the only way to meet people. And to try to please, not take it personally. They don't know you. Nobody knows you. They don't know. They are making judgments that feel personal, but how could they? You know, if they don't, one conversation or a few text exchanges and then it goes silent. It's not because you're not a witty conversationalist. It's that they're just rude.
It's very strange as well, because it's not that long ago that people would be mortified to even be on a dating website. It was something they'd be embarrassed about or not like people to find out, right? And then fast forward, what, a decade? And then it's gone to people thinking they have immunity, even though their face and name is out there, to behave however. It's such a strange twist.
Yes, it really, like I said, it's like just a cesspool of, you know, horribleness. I don't know. I don't know how people do it anymore. I don't know how you cut through the clutter. I don't know how you find people without getting completely, thoroughly annoyed and aggravated.
And you didn't meet Robbie through Ups, did you?
Well, we technically met on Facebook because we went to the same school. He's a bit older, but we had this kind of little community, a network of people, mutual friends. So I knew him from there. And then that led to I talk about it in the book. We had a mutual friend and we started talking about this mutual friend that was sort of having some problems and did we want to help him? And it got the conversation going. And then that led to more conversation. And then eventually we met. So yes, technically you could say we met, you know, thank you technology. If it wasn't, we got on each other's radar because of technology. But I really, for meeting in real life, IRL, I just think it's the way to go in as the supplement to your online dating. Please do equal amounts of both. For as much time as you spend online, go outside, go to your local whatever, get involved. Get into groups, volunteer. There's so many ways to meet people. Don't tell me, oh, I can't meet people. There's nowhere to meet anyone. No, woman, you know, now we're coming out of a pandemic. Okay, yes. So maybe the last few years have been a bit challenging, but okay, not anymore. If there's a will, there's a way. No excuses.
Okay, so maybe we're not meeting through, like, you know, dances or matchmakers or certain things that are not as common anymore, but we're meeting through what, volunteering, joining groups? Is that what you reckon?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, whatever hobbies are, whatever your passion is, go with that. If you play golf, if you are here in the States, there's so many, like this particular in California, we've got golf, it's year round, we've got pickleball, we have tennis, we have meetup groups. I think meetup is all over the place, right? You know, there are all kinds of, there's art and book groups and anything that you like. There is a group. You can find your people. And in finding your people, who knows, you may meet someone. But above and beyond that, I'm all for it because it keeps you happy and it keeps you fulfilled. And if you don't meet someone great, if someone great doesn't show up, a great life will show up. Because you're doing what you love and you're in your element and you're growing and learning, and that can only make you more attractive. And it will also take the edge off having to meet someone because you're already kind of good by yourself. This is the whole point I make in the book. You know, you're going to be okay either way.
Yeah. Well, you're still meeting people. And I'm a big believer in that, of like taking some of the pressure off. Like even in the happiest relationship, that person shouldn't be your everything.
They complement.
And so, why would we put our whole life on hold until we meet one specific person when a full life is about a whole cast of characters?
Of course. Oh, and I would also say, faith-based opportunities, churches, temples, places where you go and, your spiritual people, dog parks. I mean, there's just a ton. Your local pub, your sports bars. You love a team, go root for your team. And, there's like football teams here where there's bars for the Philadelphia Eagles, for example. Go be with your people. And then, to that end, you have to make an effort. So put yourself in places, get yourself outside, and then make eye contact and smile. Because that's super important. We are losing our ability to interface with each other because we're on our phone and we're getting lazy. And it's like a muscle. If you don't work that muscle, guess what happens? It atrophies. And then you lose it. Use it or lose it.
Yeah.
So everybody, okay. So if you make your coffee at home in the morning, no, go out and have your coffee outside. Go to the local coffee place. Don't get over this whole thing about being alone and eating alone or drinking alone. Who cares? Go out and talk to people. When you're in line, chat the person up next to you. Strike up some, little mini conversation. That's how it's done, my friends.
You know what you've reminded me of as well? I only found out recently that my uncle met his now wife through essentially I would describe as a Christian matchmaking service, but this wasn't how it was presented. So he was living in London, having emigrated from Ireland, and his wife had moved there from Malaysia, and they met through this service where you could put your details and your email in, and if they thought you'd get on with someone else that had done the same, this church would swap your emails. Essentially, it worked out because the priest knew everyone and so actually found a really nice match, and they got to emailing and eventually met. I think it was a network among a few churches. And I never knew that until this year, even though they've been married a long time now. And, again, it's maybe that same thing of people being funny about how they meet, but us single people, we do want to know, because so often we can fall for this trap of thinking everyone's meeting on the apps. And it's not the case. It's through friends, you work together, yes. You met through a hobby or interest. There are a lot of ways, even though, we do have to remind ourselves to not just stare at our phone whenever we're waiting for a bus or doing anything.
Yes. Yeah. And I want to remind everybody that when you strike up a conversation or give someone a compliment or say good afternoon, or you make their day in a tiny little way, you make their day.
And unless you compliment your guest's hair color and think it's red and it's not red.
Well, you know what? Here's the deal. I think because I color my hair and I'm in the sun a lot, I work out a lot. It's something about the sun. And here's a little girl stuff if you wanted. Sun and sweat changes the color of your hair when you color it. So,
well, I think it looks great. I did mean it, whatever color it is.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. It tends to be a little, I think they call it brassy, maybe. Is that what happens? It oxidizes?
Yeah, if it's I don't know. A warmer color.
But what was I saying about people looking at people? Oh, yeah. You make people's day. You do. It's a lovely thing because nobody does it anymore. And at the very least, it'll make you feel good. It may not turn into something, but who cares? I smile at everybody. I walk around with the tiny little corners of my mouth turned up at all times because I would like to make people feel good. And it's a nice thing to do that. And, it's the opposite of what I was saying about the contagiousness of bad, behavior. Well, when you can undo that by smiling at people, because then that person, you made that person feel good. So then they're going to go forward in their day and smile at someone else, or you're going to,
Mm-hmm.
You make them feel good, then they'll make someone feel good. It's sort of chain reaction,
And so as we start to wrap up then, we need to give another bit of advice as our rule of the game. So what thing would you recommend trying to live by in dating a relationship? I know you've already given a few already.
Oh,
is there one overarching?
you know, when we were talking about, there's so many. There's obviously, I've dropped a lot of wisdom bombs here in this hour. But I think that being a late bloomer, I want to just, you know, refer back to the title of my book, which is Done Being Single, A Late Bloomer's Guide to Love. We're all late bloomers, okay? Everybody. Nobody has it together all the way, 100%. No one. We're all a work in progress. So I want to remind everybody that just because you're not married or not in a relationship yet or not having, you know, haven't accomplished this or that or succeeded at whatever, there is time, okay? And you can do it at any time. You're never too old. It's never too late. With that said, do it. Go. Do it. Bloom. Bloom now, okay? You have it. You have greatness in you. And, you know, whatever you feel might be holding you back, look at it, work on it, and blossom.
Absolutely. And I will add to that, yes, taking your time would be my kind of takeaway from this conversation, that not only is there not as much of a rush as we can be encouraged to feel, but actually taking your time is very much part of the process, is very much part of the relationships you have working out better if you're not rushing into them, if you have done some of the work of figuring yourself out. And I'll also look for, there's a great kind of comedy rant by Leslie Jones, which I'll try and find and link in the episode description, where she kind of lists famous people that many of us look up to, like Oprah, and talks about when they got into the career we know them for. Because we can assume someone is successful or someone is doing good in whatever kind of area of their life and assume that's a permanent thing, that they've always been successful, that they've always been in happy relationships, and it's not the case. So on that note, we'll wrap up there. If people want to find your book, which has it just come out? Have I got that right?
Yes, this last week.
Last week?
I am now on Amazon, everybody, and wherever books are sold.
Love that. And the book is Done Being Single.
Yes, and then you can find out more about me at my website, which is trevabrandonscharf.com, S-C-H-A-R-F.
She's teasing me because we're going to crop out the bit where I said it wrong because I take it so seriously getting people's names right. And so I'm still embarrassed.
You know what? Even my own father couldn't say it right. He kept calling me Scarf.
Okay. Well, then I feel less bad.
Oh, Daddy, it's Sharp. Okay. Hello, Mrs. Scarf. No, it's Sharp. Anyway, so you can find me there, and I have lots of other interviews and stuff and blog posts that I do, and if you're interested in private coaching, you can contact me. I don't know what else. And then there's the podcast, Done Being Single, which I do with my husband. It's been a little bit on a hiatus for the past few months because of the book, but we're going to get back to that. So yeah, so no excuses. You can find me.
You can find her and you can find love. Love it. Yes. We'll wrap up there.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. This has been great. You're great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damage by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.